to the Buddha, to the Dharma, to the Sangha. Since this is an extraordinarily ripe time spiritually for a lot of people, I thought I'd talk a little bit about the process of the cleansing and conversion of karma. In the course of this talk, I'm going to talk about both what it is and what it isn't, this process. Things that are helpful for it and things that aren't helpful for it. But to kind of negotiate the way through the subject matter, you might say, it's helpful to have a simple reference point. And that simple reference point is faith. And what faith means in this context is that one chooses to trust that there is something greater than oneself. And the first part of this talk will be about some of the implications of that. The first part of this talk is about things that aren't really very conducive to the actual cleansing and conversion of karma, however useful they may be in some other context. When you're right up against a genuine spiritual need, there's some things that aren't helpful. So I just made a little list here, so I'll just go down the list. The first thing that isn't helpful is virtue, being a virtuous person, being a good person. You might think, well, wait a minute. What is it we're doing here if we're not becoming a better person? Well, there's a number of ways to approach that question, but let's just consider it from the point of view of, well, what if you were an actual, really incredibly saintly person? How would you go about cleansing and converting karma if you were a saint? Well, if you were sufficiently saintly, probably there wouldn't be much to cleanse and convert, would there? So, presumably, we're mostly talking, most of my audience is people like myself who aren't saints, and some of them even be people like me who don't aspire in any way to be a saint. So, for people like me, ordinary people, with a load of karma that needs help, I'm saying being a very good and virtuous person is no help to cleansing and convert, the cleansing and conversion of karma, any more than being rich or poor or beautiful or ugly or fat or thin or tall or short or any of those things. So being a better person and the accumulation of virtue, the accumulation of merit, however you want to view it, is not the point of what we're doing here. It won't do you any good for cleansing and converting karma. Another thing that won't help is understanding the past. Your personal past, the history of the world, the history of religion, your karmic past, none of those things are helpful for the cleansing and conversion of karma. And here's another place you can say, well, what about you know, learning from, you know, from your mistakes from the past or from your karmic inheritance? And I say again, if you're actually right up against a real spiritual need, knowing about your past doesn't help. And it's like it has to be let go of along with all other knowledge. And this includes knowing your karmic past. I'll come back to this in a bit. Obviously, allied to that is memory. Remembering things from the past, which is different from, can be different from understanding. Remember I said understanding the past isn't helpful. Remembering things from the past isn't helpful either. The cleansing of conversion of karma. So look, I'm kind of eliminating everything. But there's, you'll see. Feeling particular feelings isn't helpful either. Feeling sympathetic or compassionate feelings for your past or for other people or for their past or whatever, that's not helpful either. None of these things are the key issue. Now, I should add that none of them are like evil or wrong in themselves, but none of them is the key issue when you're right up against your true spiritual need that's in you. And the reason why, see if I have any, well, before I go on, I just see if there's anything else on my list. No, that's my list. So the reason why none of those is helpful is because none of those things takes the place of the eternal. That doesn't mean the eternal can't make use of all of those things, and in fact makes wonderful use of them, along with many other things that aren't on my list. But I put those things on my little list because I was just thinking of the things, the ways in which we try to jump in the driver's seat and do the job of the eternal and thereby try to do ourselves the work of the cleansing and conversion of karma. Now I go back to my initial point, the reference point for this whole talk, faith. You know, without true faith, the cleansing and conversion of karma is not possible because one does not make one's spiritual need available to the eternal to do the heavy lifting. And only the eternal can do the heavy lifting. Another way to put it is that salvation is through faith, actually. And Buddhism has a very particular and precise meaning of what that is. It's somewhat different from some meanings that people put on in other religions. But no matter how hard we try, no matter how virtuous we are, no matter how well we understand ourselves, no matter how much we've remembered from the past, no matter what we feel, what we know, none of our effort, none of those things takes the place of the simple, instinctive activity of faith. There's other things I could include in this, and I would certainly include all kinds of worldly attitudes and beliefs and values and ideologies. They're all useless for the cleansing and conversion of karma. They may be useful in other areas, they may be useful in the field of politics or psychology or business, all kinds of other areas. I see that there's about as much trouble generated as help in those areas, probably. But in general, there are no help in this particular activity of the cleansing and conversion of karma. They're no help at all, and they are not a refuge. So what is, and I've talked a little bit about what is not of help, so what is of help? And you can lay it out in a series of steps, understanding that all the steps I'm talking about are in the context of faith, our reference point again, the context of faith. First step, got to contain the leaks. First step, you've got to contain the leaks. That's the job of the precepts. That's what precepts is. Precepts is not about becoming virtuous. It has nothing to do with that. Precepts are about leak stoppage. So, let's just think of it in a metaphor to help make it clear what's meant here. In the end, you can only go so far with any kind of explanation. A person just has to experience it. But let's think in terms of the metaphor of the fountain that is so prominent in the latter part of How to Grow Lotus Blossom, the middle and latter parts of How to Grow Lotus Blossom, the fountain. Think of the fountain as there's a basin of the fountain where the water's held, and then there's the fountain itself that spouts the water up to the heavens. Then the water comes back down and is caught in the basin again, and then it recirculates. And this is a wonderful metaphor for the circulation of the water of the Spirit, for the circulation of love and gratitude, for the circulatory spiritual movement in which karma actually is cleansed and converted, in which the spiritual need gets its help. It's the help of the eternal. Now imagine a fountain like I've described here, that's got this basin at the bottom where the water is collected. You know, any water that the fountain's going to spout has to be drawn out of that basin. Now just imagine someone's coming along with a drill and drilling holes in the basin. So all around this basin, there's been holes drilled. So water is spouting out of these holes, leaking out of these, shooting out of these holes all around it. That means the fountain's got less to work with. And your fountain will just be dribbling. If anything's coming out at all, it'll just be dribbling. The more leaks, the weaker the fountain is. The pump's still capable of pumping the same amount of water, but it's got less to work with. The precepts are about stopping the leaks. Every leak that you plug strengthens the fountain, increases the flow in the fountain. So the first step is we've got to start containing the leaks. And we all have our habitually favorite ways of leaking. Whether it be speaking against others, indulging anger, not telling the truth, not being truthful with ourselves, which is really where not telling the truth comes from. Being mean-spirited, covetous, stingy, greedy, buying and selling the wine of delusion. The precepts are about, the primary meaning of the precepts is very simply about not hurting ourselves. And that from the truly contemplative point of view, the point of view of the person who longs for the perfection of Zen. The person who longs for the perfection of Zen, you got to stop the leaks. And that becomes the primary meaning of the precepts. Perceptual truth. Leak stoppage. This has nothing to do, again, with worldly morality. You got to Forget about right and wrong as the world knows it, thinks of it. It's not about that. It's an irrelevancy. This is about something much closer to home spiritually. What is the next step from leak stoppage? Well, you've got to collect, have all that water that's collected in that basin, and you've got to get it hooked up with the pump that can move it up. You got to get it hooked up with a pump that can move it up. That pump is the Buddha nature itself, the natural activity of the Buddha nature, not something that you or I create. It's not something you or I create. No one creates it. It is. Each of us has the Buddha nature. That pump exists in each of us. But that pump is not made accessible to the water until our will is engaged in that direction. And that our will being engaged in the direction of letting the Buddha nature get a word in edgeways is called meditation. That's the spiritual meaning of meditation. Meditation is letting the eternal get at it. Letting the eternal get at it. So, another way to look at it is, precepts is saying no to the world, no to worldliness. Meditation is saying yes to the eternal. You need a no and you need a yes. The yes has the guard of the no around it. As soon as you take refuge in worldly attitudes and beliefs and values, you take your drill and you drill a big hole right into your basin. Reverend Master used to talk about, when I was a young monk, about standing against the world to train in wisdom. Whether you're a lay person or a monk, if you wish the deep cleansing and conversion of karma, you've got to stand against the world. Stand against worldly attitudes and values. That is, not go along with them. Not buy into them. Not subscribe to them. That doesn't mean that you have to be at war with them. Being at war seems to be a favorite occupation of us Americans. We've had wars on poverty, on drugs, on foreigners, on immigrants, on just everything you can think of. The Americans, we seem to be some of the world's modern-day Vikings, whether some of us like it or not. I'm not talking about a war of religious zealots on the world. It's not what I'm talking about. You just don't go along with the things that your heart says, don't go along with it. Then you have a protective ring around that inner activity of meditation. Ramesh used to say about the monasteries, we don't have defenses here to keep the monks in, we have defenses to keep the world out. If we're doing our job, if the monks, if the seniors of the monastery are doing our job and holding the world at bay, then people can come into the monastery and they can go deeply within. Because the world is held at bay. Worldliness is held at bay by the mandala of the seniors of the monastery. Then people can turn within and find the treasure house of their own Buddha nature. and let their own Buddha nature get at their own need, their spiritual need. The third thing you need is you need the teaching that goes with this practice. Shortly before she died, the last time I saw her master, she told me when we were alone, she said, in order to have the highest realization, you need to combine. You have both the highest practice and the highest teaching. In order for the cleansing and conversion of karma to be able to happen, you need the teaching that points the way. Buddhism has many fine examples of this teaching. For me, the finest I know of is how to grow a lotus blossom. And, you know, many other aspects of the teaching that opened and flowered at that time in her master's great Kensho in 1976. It's not limited by any means how it goes to lotus blossom, and it didn't just start there. But for me, it's the distilled essence of that book contains the distilled essence of the teaching about how to do this. And all of that is in the context of pure faith. So now one can say no to the world, say no to worldly attitudes and values and beliefs, say no to greed, hate, and delusion, say, you know, there's limits on you, you can't just run rampant anymore. Precepts, perceptual truths. One can turn within and say to the Eternal, please help me, and then gather up the spiritual pain and the need, the longing and the need and the pain, the anguish of heart, the grief, whatever it is, gather it all up in our hands, as it were, in our spiritual hands, and make an offering to the Eternal of it. Then one can wait in meditation, wait in the stillness of one's own heart. We're not speaking just about formal meditation here. We're talking about the stillness of one's own heart. One can wait in that stillness for the help of the Eternal and for the teaching of the Eternal to come. So as that help and that teaching come, what do you have showing up? Bingo! The way to virtue. The way to understanding, enlightened memory, and profundity of feeling, of gratitude and love and devotion. All of these things flower forth then. The very things that I started out this talk saying, that's not it. It's not it when we're trying to be in the driver's seat and make use of it. From that driver's seat position. It's part of the answer when the Eternal makes use of it and brings it in. So that when it is good, when it is truly good, then the understanding arises naturally. The memory happens naturally. The essence of virtue, which is the perfection of generosity of spirit manifests naturally. Why would it not? When the Buddha nature is having its own way at last. And then the feeling that goes with this manifests naturally. It may be a feeling of great suffering as the need from the past, you know, finally comes to the surface, we will not stay in that dark place. As the spiritual landscape changes, the feeling too will change. As the conversion happens, the feeling too. Feeling is a signal of something that's happening. It's a signal of need. It can also be a signal of enlightenment. One of the confirmatory signs that things are going in the right direction. So it's really a question, who is it that's using these tools? Is it me blundering around with my good intentions and my driver's seat point of view? Or is it me surrendering to the eternal, saying, not my will but thine, please help me. And then allowing myself to be helped. It's all the difference in the world between the two. Dogen wrote in Bendoa, a lecture on training, the world of the Buddhas is nowhere to be found in either ordinary thinking or consciousness, nor can it be known through disbelief or low knowledge. Disbelief and low knowledge, worldly knowledge, see. For in order to enter therein, in order to enter the world of the Buddhas, the world of enlightenment, one must have true belief. One must have true faith. However much an unbeliever may be taught, he will still have trouble in finding it. Because he's not turning everything over to the eternal, but clinging to a selfish point of view, to an illusion of control. He says, when the Buddha was preaching at Ryoju, the unbelievers were allowed to depart. The master quoted this many times over the years. The unbelievers were allowed to depart. In order to develop true belief within your own mind and heart, you must study and train yourself hard. If you cannot do so, you should give up for a while. At the same time, regretting the fact that you are uninfluenced in your search for truth by former good karma. He must have been dealing with some tough nuts when he said that. No one in this room that I'm talking to needs to give up for a while. And sometimes one actually does need to just back out for a bit, slack off for a little while. Hopefully not do anything too crazy in the process and recover some perspective before one goes at it again. This is generally the case in people who have got in a deep rut of a kind of desperate spiritual striving and have lost their perspective on how to train in the middle path, or have maybe never had the good fortune to acquire a perspective on how to train in the middle path. But what I say is if you can find a teacher who knows how to train in the middle path, then and you can really, really listen with your heart to what that teacher's teaching, you can learn to do it. In River Master G, we had a very great good fortune of someone who is a true master of training in the middle path, and whose great-heartedness, great compassion, and love of life really showed love of everything, you know, showed what the middle path really is, that it's not a mean-spirited, narrow straitjacket kind of path. It's a great-hearted path full of acceptance And generosity, above all, generosity of spirit. Generosity of spirit towards oneself and towards others. And this is all what grows naturally out of that faith, of that pure faith. When people have read Rin Master's diary from Japan, her training in Japan, what people always say is they see the tremendous faith there. Well, when you read Lotus Blossom, if you knew Reverend Master, you know, you see the results of that tremendous faith. That faith, the true activity of faith, the choosing to go the path of faith in the eternal, faith in your own Buddha nature, faith in the Buddha nature of others, faith in the transcendent Buddha nature, the Dharmakaya. Choosing to walk that path opens the doors of the heart in a way that nothing else possibly can. And there's a path of spiritual greatness, even within the context of an entirely ordinary daily life of an ordinary human being. The perfection of Zen. It's a bit strange to say the pursuit of excellence in the form of virtue or understanding or knowledge, harmony, any of these things, can be an obstacle. But they can't, when it's a driver's seaty kind of pursuit of excellence, it is an obstacle, actually. And in some way it has to be taken away from one. If the pursuit is a sufficiently dedicated and narrowly focused attempt, it sometimes has to be just taken away in a rather rather rough way, just by the way karma works. And when one loses everything, then perhaps one can turn towards the eternal and truly cry for help and find what the real truth is. And then have everything given back. Forsaking self, the universe grows I. It's the Buddha, it's the Dharma, it's the Sangha.